The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm doing one actually from my kitchen. I'm here with the owner of Marchese Fuminelli. It is Armando Fuminelli, wine producer in Verona. Armando, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you and talk a little bit about wines.
Absolutely. So, well, let's just start here. If you could tell everyone a little bit about the property and about the history of your winery.
Okay. So we are growing grapes from 1470 in Verona area in Valpolicella. It's not far from Venice. It's a famous, particularly for the Amarone, but also for other great, spectacular wines. And we own a historical property. It was built in before us in the Roman times. We still keep archaeological stuff, stones, rest of a temple, and many other stuff. It's an archaeological site. We are not allowed to drill more than 60, 70 centimeters without archaeologists on site.
Really?
Yeah.
There's been wine. I mean, you guys, before the end of the 1990s, you didn't really make your own wine. It was more of just a grape growing facility.
We produced till 1927.
Oh, okay.
Wine.
Yeah.
And after we stopped because nobody from the family was interested to follow this kind of business. And we proceed with sale of selling grapes to other wineries
on
the region. That happened for about 50 years till 99.
I want to get into 1999 and just how much that changed your life and what you were doing. But how many great wineries do you think from the past eventually died because there wasn't someone in the family to take over?
Yeah, many, mostly in Italy, all around. They are still existing. There are some that was taking over. They still maintain the old name, but taking over from bottling companies. And so we are one of the few that remain on our region, still growing grapes. Because the main business was growing grapes, like all the old family in Veneto. We sold before the grapes to companies like Bertani, Quintarelli, and Bolla, many other great wine producers. And now we produce by ourselves. Everything that we do is with our own grapes, so we don't buy grapes. We still sell part of our grapes to other wineries.
You mentioned Quintinelli, which, of course, is one of the classic producers from that region. What is it about your soil, your vineyard sites? What is it that makes them so special? Because if you're selling to them, well, then you're in a really good location.
Yeah, we are in the classic region, in the heart of the Valpolicella. Classica, because, you know, in Valpolicella, like in Tuscany, they are five villages. They are allowed to print classic on the label. Sant'Ambrogio, San Pietro, Fumane, Negrar, and Marano. And same like in Tuscany for Gallo Nero, for the classic Chianti. And so we our property it's in a hill. The exposition it's practically north, south, east, west. So we are keeping the old way, the old system of production, the pergola, and of course also a new one, Guyot. But we remain with both system on growing grapes.
How many hectares? How much vineyard do you guys have? What's your vineyard size?
For our production, 23. Mm-hmm. And the rest we sell.
So let's go to 1999, I believe that's when, or 1998, excuse me, when you started managing the family winery. I was wondering if you could take me back to those early days at that time when were you prepared for this? Were you prepared to take over after, I believe, your grandfather had passed away?
Yeah, because our passion and you know, producing wine, it's a way to maintain the name of our old family, too,
right,
around the world. Before that, I was by the Italian embassy in many countries like Middle East and East Africa, and for me, it's like to be ambassador of my name.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a cool way of thinking about it. You're right, because 100 years from now, people will still be drinking wine with your name on it. How did you make that transition? You have a political science degree, and as you mentioned, you were the trade attaché for the Italian embassy, working in East Africa, working in the Middle East. So, Armando, how did you go from that to now diving full into the family business of owning and making wine?
Yeah, first of all, because a lot of great assistance in production, in farmers, that they, you know, it's like a family by us. We live in an island, and all the workers, they are with us from 30, 40 years, generations of workers. So I find a ground ready to jump in the market.
Mm-hmm. Was this something you always knew you would do? Like when you were younger, did you always know at some point?
No, not really, but was the right decision. I'm really happy with what I'm doing. And we are all around the world. We sell wine in 32 different countries around the world. And our wine, they receive a lot of awards and prizes in U.S., in Canada, in North of Europe, in Far East too. And it's really a passion. Without passion, it's difficult to,
right.
You know, or you are a bottling company that selling on large distribution channel. But if you grow your own grape and you produce your own wine, first of all, you need a big passion.
This quote that I found, that the goal for you guys is to combine traditional and modern techniques to produce wines that are an authentic expression of the estate's terroir. And I was wondering if you could explain to the listeners the difficulties of trying to merge the traditional way of making wine, but then putting in more of the modern slant, the modern technique as well.
First of all, the wine that we are producing, the most celebrated one is the Amarone. It's the only wine in the world that need 100% of dried grapes. So we dry all the grapes practically from harvest time till beginning of January. This was the tradition. Now, weather is changing and seasons are shorter, a lot of humidity during the fall. So for that reason, the consortio, they allowed to crush the grapes also before January. But we still keep the fruits in the penthouse, in the rooms, till after Christmas holiday. So it's a huge reduction of weight. If you think that in 3 months, the grape, and it's a very expensive grape, at harvest time, 1 kilo of grapes for Amarone, it look around 2.5-3 euro per kilo. And if you think that we'll use 50% of the weight, 3 months, that means 6 euro of grapes, just raw material.
Yeah.
You find wines for 6 euro on the market in bottle.
It's why it is an expensive wine, because of the technique. Actually, for the listeners, for people who don't know, Amarone, I was wondering if you could just tell people a little bit about the grapes you use, the process, just what are the basics of making Amarone, because it is such a unique wine. It is such a unique wine in terms of how it is made.
Amarone is a DOCG wine now. That what mean? It's a denominazione origine controllata e garantita. So it's a very strictly way of production. The winery is not allowed to buy grapes outside of the region, and it's a really small region, 5 villages only. And
is that, hold on, is that really, that's it? I never realized that, because like you think of, even though Burgundy is small, there is lots of regions for the Grand Cru and the Premier Cru vineyards and things like that. So it's only 5 villages where you can get your grapes for Amarone.
I'm talking now about the Classico.
Yeah, yeah, the DOCG.
Classico. Classico mm-hmm. is five villages only. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we are not allowed to use any kind of grapes. We need to utilize only regional grapes like Corvina, Corvinone, Rondinella. You know, there are names that they are not international.
No.
Still, 10% can be blended with the international varieties that are registered. Not more than 10. Variety of grapes that are not in our terroir, like Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and other regional varieties close to us, like the Teroldego in Trento, Raboso, mm-hmm. and this other one, but always no more than 10%. 90% need to be local variety only. We need to harvest everything by hand because, you know, to keep fruit for 3 months need a big selection on quality. Mm-hmm. The fruit need to be healthy without any broken fruit. So it's quite a long way to do that. We need to harvest by hand. We do a double selection, a second selection in the what we call fruttaio. It's the rooms that we stock there the grapes till January after crushing the grapes. And another thing, so we are not allowed to crush when we want. We need to wait the authorization from the consortio. Sometime before was always after Christmas time.
Yeah.
Now because the humidity during the fall, the seasons are changing. Sometime we are allowed to crush also in end of November, beginning of December.
So people come like from the DOCG, from the authority. They come and they tell you when
the
you can
authority,
do it.
Yes. Yes. Sure. And of course we. We cannot do that before the authorization, but we are allowed to wait longer mm-hmm. if we like to do a quality product.
Right. Okay. I was wondering if you just tell people just a little bit more about the drying out process of because that I think when I think of Amarone and why it's different than making a Pinot Noir is just all the grapes just sitting there drying out.
Yeah, we dry in cases and wooden cases only. They need the rooms are with air. Conditioning system and low humidity controlled. Anyway, we do selection by hand too every 2-3 weeks mm-hmm. to be sure that the fruit is perfect.
It's one of these jobs that always needs humans. Like I don't know if you could ever
before,
have robots.
Before right? old ladies, they was coming every week
right.
to select and to check the grapes. Now, with new technology, we are controlling the humidity, mm-hmm. but still we need also a physical control for that.
Was it difficult during the years of COVID? Because it's such a, you need humans to be together in, you know, a smaller space. Was it trickier making the wines?
Yeah, the big problem during COVID for us, for farmers, was employee. Because, you know, a lot of things that we are doing, not just me, but mostly of the winery, are with subcontractors. They are coming for cutting the vines,
right.
for many, many other treatments. And during the COVID, all that subcontractors there disappear, mostly in our region, because we are in northeast of the subcontractor. They are coming from Romania and Moldavia or Eastern Europe countries. Mm-hmm. And now they are back after 2 years, but not like before. It's
right.
still a huge, big problem.
Yeah, it's like anything else in the world. The hardest thing is staffing.
Yeah.
It's always staffing. You mentioned, actually, it's one thing I didn't realize. It's one thing I love about doing this podcast is I get to learn things that I didn't know before. I didn't know that you could use 10% international varietals. Do you, for your program, does it change every year? Do you use Cab Franc, Sauvignon, Merlot? Like,
we use what we are growing. We don't buy grapes.
But do you use Merlot?
I'm growing some Merlot mm-hmm. and Teroldego.
Mm-hmm.
So the 10% that we are using, it's Merlot and Terroir de Gaulle.
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't... what is the other line? Do you guys... I mean, I'm assuming, obviously, it's not just Amarone. I would imagine some Valpolicellas, some Opassos.
Sure.
What is the full line of the Feminelli's wine?
First of all, we start with the white, because in the family, we was drinking always white, full-body white wine, with also local varieties that... we still use Garganega and Trebbiano are the same variety that are utilized for the production of the Soave wine. But Soave need to be 100% Garganega. We do a blend of 50% Trebbiano and 50% Garganega. They are old vines in pergola, 30, 40 year old. We after harvest, we... and fermentation, we age for 18 months in French tonneau, 500 liter barrels, and 1 year in bottle before release. It's a Burgundy looking white wine, and full body, 13.5 alcohol, and it's not easy to sell in Italy because you know in Europe, all around Europe, because in Europe. Normally, the people thinking that the Italian white wine are fresh and cheap.
Yeah, fresh, cheap, high acid, lemon, lime, not much else.
Sure.
Yeah.
What we call vino da terrazza, balcony wine, because you drink in the afternoon, chilled. We do a wine like that too. Now it's the name is Buran, but the terzo, that is the our aged. White, it's a celebrated wine. We sell a lot in Japan because we are growing on limestone rocks, the white grapes, the white varieties. The minerality of the wine is really high, and it's perfect with seafood and Asiatic food.
Well, see, now I'm fascinated, and you know, I got in contact with you through Danny Sinelli and Winehouse Imports, and shout out to them. I got a delicious Aglianico that I bought from them a couple months ago. Can I get this white wine you mentioned? Does he have it on the portfolio now? The idea of semi full bodied Italian white wine, I'm fascinated because I don't really get to try much of it beyond maybe a little northeastern Chardonnay.
Danny is a great friend for a long time, from the time when he was working with Alpern, and I still keep a good relation with him. But my agent is Alpern Wines.
Okay, it's
and
Alpern.
You can find the white by Alpern Wines.
I've certainly what have I most from them? Usually a lot of Burgundy. I go to Halperin for certainly
for Burgundy. They keep a lot of Burgundy.
Yes, they do.
It's a
fantastic portfolio of Burgundy over there. All right, what is more nerve-wracking for you, racing vintage cars in South Africa, or figuring out, you know, or watching your grapes dry out? What is more nerve-wracking for you?
I mean, I like to do both. The problem is the time. Now, you know, it's I'm more and more busy with the winery. We start now to produce in Tuscany too, because I own a family property there, not far from San Gimignano, still in the Florence province.
Yep.
We start already with a Vermentino. Before, we just sold grapes and olives. Now, from last year only, because the state is really beautiful and... restart with production there. It's opportunity to be there too. No, other way I am too busy in Veneto, and we are really happy with the Vermentino and with the olive oil.
All right, so you are expanding. Well, but I got to get back to the racing of vintage cars. You know, how did you get into that? I imagine you know you enjoy the thrill and the excitement of it. I mean, in some ways, it's a different sort of one, but there's a thrill and excitement at vintage when you're picking the grapes. But how did you get into the vintage cars?
No, it's a passion that also my father was a collector of old timers. And I'm race too. I'm official pilot of BMW Museum in Munich.
Yeah.
For old timer, of course, not for the new models. And I do it with this museum cars, Mille Miglia in Italy, and many other races in Germany, Austria, France, Swiss, and many also rally, overseas rallies like Argentina, Milas, and Jordan, and Japan, and South Africa.
That's
I'm collecting too. I'm collecting English old timer. I love particularly Aston Martin old ones.
That's it's a good one to pick. I think Austin. Yeah, I think immediately I think of James.
Yeah, I'm
Bond.
I'm racing in winter with pre-war Aston Martin.
Really?
They are 27 pieces only. The name is Ulster. Was a winner in Le Mans in 1938. My car is from 1935.
Wow.
Racing green color.
Yeah.
And it's a great car, really. It's not easy to drive, particularly during winter time with snow. But we do rally under the snow too.
Really? Because that's and especially parts of, anywhere where there's wine being made, there's usually winding roads and lots of hills. And a car from the mid 30s, I imagine. Does it brake well? How does that handle? How does that handle tight turns?
Yeah, brake is outside, like in the old time. Yeah, it's a light car, but very fast.
Yeah,
it's a speed. It's a racing car. Yeah.
Reading about how much you love white Burgundy, and I think it's a common one for most of us in the wine industry. For people that don't get into it or haven't tried a lot of it, what is it about white Burgundy that you love so much?
I my preferred wines are the white Burgundy, and this is the reason why I asked to my winemaker to do a white wine that look like a Burgundy white wine.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Alpern is representing a lot of Burgundy celebrities.
Yep.
And sometime during the Grand Cru charity event or in other occasion, I try with the other French partners from Burgundy, my white, and they are all really surprised about drinking something like that.
That must have filled you with pride.
Yeah.
If you love white Burgundy, you wanted to make the Northern Italian sort of expression of your love for that wine, and they're enjoying it. That must have felt great.
Yeah, this was. And my preferred Burgundy is the Bienvenue Batard Montrachet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full body white, great sapidity and the minerality. I love that wine, and of course this it's just a passion, the white. But we produce also a lot of red wines like Valpolicella, the Ripasso. And also another wine that probably it's not so popular in Canada. It's a appassimento.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? That we harvest like for Amarone, and we crush immediately 60% of the grapes. The other 40, we dry, but not so long like for the Amarone, but for 4, 5, 6 weeks only, depend of the humidity. And after we blend with the other 60%. The result is a kind of baby Amarone, full body, long life. We do sometime vertical testing, 10, 15 years old, and it's still registered like a Valpolicella Classico Superiore, but it's a appassimento. It's a kind of baby Amarone. We cannot call baby Amarone. I'm surprised that sometime, particularly in the United States, I find in the wine list under baby Amarone.
Yes.
But it's illegal.
Of course, in Europe, everything is regulated, and in North America, it's the Wild West. You just can't use the word Chablis or Champagne on your wine if it's made from Sonoma. Actually, I'd love to hear a little bit about your Ripasso program, only because if the I would say Ripasso was the gateway red wine for me, and my stepdad, 90% of his cellar is it's Barolo, it's tons of Amarone, and you know he's not going to open up Amarone for a 19-year-old on a Wednesday. So I drank a lot of Ripasso. I'd love to hear about yours.
To do a Ripasso, you need to do a good Amarone because right. you use the same grapes. Practically, it's re-blending the wine over the skin of the Amarone grapes. And for that reason, they need to be selected, clean, and you can do Ripasso only if you are drying healthy Amarone grapes.
Right. How would you describe your Amarone? I mean, I imagine that's... How would you describe it?
It's the right description. Probably it's velvet because it's 16.5 alcohol, sometimes the reserva.
Yeah.
But you don't feel the alcohol in
right.
your mouth. Of course,
wow.
if you drink a full bottle, you will feel if the police stop you
yes.
on the way back home.
If you're drinking Amarone, put your keys away.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. But particularly Amarone, like my Amarone, I'm not the there are also other producers that they are doing on that way. So more softer in terms of body. It's alcohol content. It's high, but you really don't feel, you know. And it's also great from under the commercial point of view because that means that by two, you can finish a bottle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If the alcohol sensation is too high after the first glass, you don't drink more.
How tricky is that? Because my complaint always about bad Amarone, and that sounds weird to say bad Amarone because even the bad stuff is still, there's been so much time and attention and care put into it, but a bad one always feels like it's overwhelming me early and then I can have a glass and then afterwards it's like I can't sense anything afterwards.
But you know the difference between a good or a bad Amarone, it's depend only from the producer, because it's a very expensive wine to produce.
Yeah.
First of all, you need to harvest everything by hand. Need to be grapes from the terroir only. Need to be safe and the cost. As I told you before, if you think that in Italy the medium price for 1 kilo of any kind of grapes, beside Brunello di Montalcino or Barolo Barbaresco, but they are close to our cost. But the other variety is between 60 cents and 1 euro per kilo. We are talking for the Amarone of 2.5-3 euro. And beside that, we lose another additional 50% of the weight. So that means a double cost. And this is the first point. Need to be like that. Because it's expensive, sometimes there are wineries, particularly bottling companies, they try to find a way to crush before, to use grapes that it's not on the best condition. And this is what make Amarone bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the other big investment is that you need to keep, to do a great Amarone, you need to keep at least 3 years in barrel. And what we do after bottling, we keep the Amarone additional year in bottle without label before labeling. So they are practically at least four years before release.
So yeah, just get it to settle and start to be what it's supposed to be. We could find these wines through Halprin, which anyone who listens to this podcast, Halprin's, just Google it, easy to find. They've got a stunning portfolio. You know, I forgot to ask you this, Armando. When did you first start to fall in love with wine? Was it a moment with your family as a teenager? Like, when was the moment you realized that this is a product that you loved?
Yeah, probably from family, drinking good wines with my father all around the world, and it's a passion that it's remained in me from when I was a teenager. Really.
Mm-hmm. How long are you in Canada for?
Now till Sunday. I have a charity event tonight with a great group of fantastic friends. I have a lot of friends in Toronto. I'm feeling to be Torontonian.
Yeah.
tonight it's with bicycle fanatic group, Team Revolution. It's quite famous in Toronto. They are doing Gran Fondo all around the world, particularly in Italy, because mostly are Italian-Canadian persons. And we do for that this event tonight, I offer a full tonneau of Amarone for the charity, and will be 660 bottle of Riserva, and will be released in a couple of years. But tonight we do the auction to sell the bottles, including visiting to our estate, because it's a beautiful estate. We do a lot of events there, and it's included in the auction tonight.
Armando, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. I can't wait to find your Amarone, but I can't wait to find that white wine. I'm now really super curious, so I'll have to go check that out at Halperin. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your stay here in Toronto.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.